conversational nature of reality is something I believe in. I believe in that concept, and it's gotten me into trouble. Because even in the notion of being a minister, I believe that the reflection should be more a conversation with your thinking and with your thought and your engagement than me standing up here telling you what to think or how to be. And I realize that some people want that. They want that sense. I just don't believe in that place for me. And it's driven some visiting ministers or ministers who are here crazy too, who thought it should be way different. Joan Kahn Schneider comes to mind as somebody. She and I used to have that conversation many times over. But as many of you know, I came to divinity school in my mid-30s after graduate work and research in ecology, evolutionary biology, and then 5 years as a conservation biologist and working for the Nature Conservancy. But when I went to divinity school, when I was in divinity school, David White was just beginning to figure out how to share his poetry. He was a friend of Sharon Parks, who was one of my favorite professors. And then he came to present to us and actually stayed at the divinity school, and we were with him for several days each time. This was before he focused on corporate America. I think back then he was still trying to figure out how to make a living with his poetry. I think he got that formula down. But he also points out that corporation is a word from the Latin corpus, which means body. And it's, in a way, even though we have other understandings, but how do we come together in a body to do things that we might not accomplish or we would not be able to accomplish alone? When I was in divinity school, I was in this frontier space he now describes in his poetry, or the poetry he picked spoke to me. So it wasn't so much his poems then. But if I knew then that his background as a zoologist was so similar to mine, I had forgotten it until I looked back over this. Spending so much time noticing and being, you can just stop there. Spending so much time noticing and being, but then you go with the natural world. And it's odd that we call that the natural world, as if distinguishing it from us. He describes that time as what? Being present to the other and being in that otherness. He went on to become a poet. I went on to eventually go into Unitarian Universalist ministry. We did it from similar connections, a love of the world and a realization of something more to life and being than the language of science is capable of holding, in relational ways, but a conversation nonetheless. He now describes what he does as working with the conversational nature of reality. That also sounds like an aspirational description of good Unitarian Universalist ministry. I like it anyway. The conversation with reality is what happens at the frontier between our sense of self and the world. It's what happens at the frontier between what we desire of the world and what the world desires of us. The frontier that's moving into a deeper, broader, and wider possible future that's waiting for us if we hold the conversation. He begins his TED Talk, which is called, and he covers this in that, which is called A Lyrical Bridge Between Past, Present, and Future, by just starting right in by saying, youthful perspective on the future, present perspective on the future, and future mature perspective on the future. This frontier of meeting between what we call the self and what we call the world is the only place that is real. But it's astonishing how little time we spend at this frontier and not abstracted away in one strategy or another. How little time we spend in conversation with the conversational nature of reality. His introductory story in that talk illustrates some of the overlap of his path. He says that he was coming into, after a transatlantic flight, he was coming into immigration, and he pointed out that immigration is not your most spiritually grounded place at this moment. And he was not his best self. He was tired. His shirt was unbuttoned. He had a day's growth of beard. He was impatient. And the immigration officer took his passport, looked down at it, and said, "What do you do, Mr. White?" And he looked at the immigration officer and said, "I work with the conversational nature of reality." It's a good thing he was a white male. "I work with the conversational nature of reality." At which point the immigration officer in his uniform leaned forward over his podium and said, "I needed you last night." Mr. White began to protest that his powers as a poet and a philosopher only go so far. But right away, they were into a conversation about the immigration officer's marriage. There he was in his uniform, his job. And the whole time he was having this conversation, he was looking up and down the line to be sure his supervisor didn't see him, didn't see that he was having a real conversation. What would a supervisor, what would our inner supervisor say in those moments? Get back to work. Get back to what you really should be doing. Conversational nature. It's a back and forth rather than an imposition of one view or strategy over another. Being in conversation with reality means you are truly listening and hearing. Means that you may find yourself in a position where you don't have the answer and you need to ask for help. It means that you are not the one doing all the talking. That's me right now. You're engaged with what is going on, not just making it fit the narrative in your head. Not just making it fit the narrative of your own structured importance. Not just making it fit your strategies on the path you think you have to forge. Without being in conversation, without giving emphasis to empathy over fear, or compassion, caring with, over protection, being in conversation. Rabbi Edwin Friedman, the late Rabbi Edwin Friedman, wrote a book a lot on family systems, and he was big when I was a graduate student in early ministry in doing workshops for Unitarian Universalist congregations to try to help them figure out the dynamics of a congregation. But he had this one phrase that has really struck with me as central to everything he taught. He said, cutoffs are more pernicious than trauma. Only he said it, trauma. I can't do it how he does. Cutoffs are more pernicious than trauma. The conversational nature of reality. Unitarian theologian Henry Nelson Wyman talks about creative interchange, being in that space where you're listening and hearing in the conversation and relational space with the other. And in that space, something is created. He actually talked about that as the space that he understood as God. So on Earth Day, you could think about it as actually a reminder to remember the conversational nature of reality, of the others all around us. Our strategies for being good stewards that we take so much pride in are merely thoughts and commitments. They're not solutions. They don't quiet or end the need. They shouldn't end our relationship. We've done this, we've done that, or change the limits of what Earth can, and I would add, should be asked to handle, so we can just get on with our business, our busyness. The way most of us have come to understand and construct what we call a good life for ourselves, myself included, can't help but be in direct opposition to what is needed to be in healthy relationship with our environment, our world, and other beings. David White in the Galapagos said he was in the presence of the other. We, as we are, and the numbers and privilege of us that are and are to be, are doing damage. We do not seem to be living sustainably as a whole, even as we make efforts in that direction. Facing that, what we do, we each keep doing our part, living as we must, enjoying what we do, and at the same time, also never sitting back or defending what we are doing or what we have done to live more sustainably, whether it's recycle, reduce energy consumption, compost, buy carbon credits. Maybe I know a couple of people who have even reduced the size of their house to reduce their carbon footprint. Whatever fits each of us. We do our part. We make a commitment to stay in the conversation. And conversation must include how to come together in community and to build community so that we might just accomplish those things we might never accomplish alone. And also accompany, support, encourage each other on the journey so that we're staying on the frontier of trying, living, enjoying, and hoping. We resist the temptation to despair, to say that because we think our small efforts will not make a difference, we won't keep trying to make a difference. Because despair is what? Despair is the absence of hope. We despair to the degree we remove ourselves from our conversation with hope, from being and living in conversation with hope. We were discussing in our discussion class, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but the Unitarian Universalists, Christ for Unitarian Universalists, and we were discussing the two chapters of what could the Trinity mean for Unitarian Universalists and what does the crucifixion mean? But one of the things we were discussing was the faces of God. And Joan Chittister, who is a nun, was writing about the many faces of God and saying, if my God is life and hope, so my God is life and hope, then life will be overflowing and something else forever. I will live life as if it's overflowing. Removing ourselves from our conversation with hope. That's that quote. Abstracting ourselves out of our bodies, out of our direct experience, and out of a deeper, broader, and wider possible future that is waiting for us. We despair, we take ourselves out of that future. Look at the solar panels on the roof. How often do we notice that they are there? There's that word notice. So then how often do we forget that they are there? So I would suggest look at them, notice them, feel the accomplishment, even as you hear the voices discounting them as too little, yet there they are. They're a moment of right relationship. Here we are, in conversation with striving to live in right relationship. Practice being your being in the conversation, in holding the conversation. This week was the 19th anniversary of the shooting at Columbine. How do we address that? I was thinking with this question of gun control, I started to say, will you? But it's how do you? How do I? How do we stay in the frontier of the conversation rather than retreating into the status quo, which is the strategy, the abstraction of the strategy of what we think we should be living. I thought about the incident in the Starbucks in Pennsylvania where the two African-American men were, the police came in and just put them in handcuffs and took them away. But what if the policeman who'd come in there had been thinking about having a conversation with him? What if he'd come in there and said, rather than like this, they get something like this and get, you know, walking in. But what if he'd walked in and said, I don't know, let's think about it. But ahead of time he goes, hey, what's going on? You know, the manager just called me here, but it doesn't look like there's anything happening. Can I buy you a cup of coffee? Can we sit and talk? I'll talk to the manager later. It's just easier here. I need to look like I'm doing something, so can we just talk? And then engage in a conversation about why they got called. What is the racism that's going on in those situations? What's happening right there, you know? And talk to these young men about that. And I realize you go, maybe that's not the right conversation, but just see the shift between going in there to do something, but going in there to talk, and then even going to talk with the supervisor later. I would say that Unitarian Universalism can actually be thought of as being in the conversational nature of reality. In that group I was talking about, the discussion group this week, several people were there, and one person said, I'm reading this, I'm working with these concepts, because we're just exploring them to see what they can mean for each other, but every time I hear the word God, I get turned off. I feel that Scotty McLennan, the author, is saying that it almost requires this belief in God, and I just react to that all the time, and I can't hear anymore after that. She said, basically was saying, I can't stay in the conversation when I hear that. And so we explored it with each other, how to get back into conversation, how to sit down and have a cup of coffee. In Unitarian Universalism, you don't have to know a name, you don't have to hold, and you don't have to have that sense of, I believe in God or not. You just have to hold and move with a larger sense and feeling, the nature of which we share. Move with a direct experience of something more. A faith community, a community of meaning, brings back into conversation the conversational nature of reality. So we're sharing an orientation, engaging, not needing an answer, but engaging to be together in the questions, to be engaged in making that inclusive vision real, both within ourselves and without and into the world. So how many of you have received a letter from me in the last couple of days? Okay. So I actually came up with this title to give me an opening to send that letter out and to announce my retirement date without telegraphing it ahead of time. The conversational nature of reality, in conversation with reality, it actually describes the process for me of coming to this decision. As many of you knew before I did, age and aging creates its own realities. No matter what strategy you try to put and move on into that. In the letter, I said that I came to Unitarian Universalist ministry as a calling to live into, not as a job to retire from. And I came to Hendersonville as a town to be at home in. And both of them have been that, and you have been that congregation to be at home and to live into with. We have grown together in many ways. When I had heart surgery, it's been 2.5 years ago now, it kind of moved me into my third act. There was that realization. It also took me longer to recover from than I realized. I only realized that in hindsight because I thought I was recovered. But it took me close to 1.5 years, almost 2 years, for my creativity, my sort of connection with things to come back. And I think they were affected even before that. But I have that now. I have that sense, that connection, that energy and excitement about what is needed and what can be. But I also don't have that sense of follow through in a certain way. David White, in his intro to the TED Talk, talks about the youthful perspective on the future, the present perspective on the future, and the future perspective on the future, and how they all come together. But in conversation with the nature of mine and our realities, it is time. It's time for me to announce my intention to retire. It's in my best interest. I turned 66 in November, and I'll be eligible for full Social Security benefits at that point. There are things I want to do while my body still supports me in doing them. There are interests I want to pursue while my mind has the spark, and that I can pursue at a pace that is more my own. I know how to live when my time is at hand, meaning when I've got my time in my own hands. But there's a problem with retiring mid-year, and that's that the Unitarian Universalist Association has only an annual cycle for placing interim ministers. Congregations apply mid-April to find an interim minister for the following September. So it actually works out well for me and for you. It gives this congregation the time to clarify this work we're starting on a new governance structure that is more in conversation with the future and less just a result and a shape of the past. You can clarify the role of the minister in that structure that you want, and then you can request a minister with skills that fit more not just what we have been, but what you are becoming. The UUA Transitions Office says that over 85% of the ministers who are in search want congregations that have done that work. Your future, mature perspective births more youthful, youth-filled perspective, and so keeps the organization, the body, the congregation more alive and vital. Krista Tippett says about corporations, but she says to David White, you extend this idea that there's no self that will survive a real conversation. You say there's no organization that will keep its original identity if it's in a conversation. I suppose you also mean a conversation within and without and with the world as well. Mr. White says, yeah, all of us have this inherited conversation inside us, which we know is untouchable. It comes from our parents, I would say from our past, from our founders. It comes from our, he says, the way we're made and all the rest of it. But that's an invisible quality inside you. All the visible qualities that take form and structure will have to change in order to keep the conversation real. Just as we go through the different decades of our life, we have to change the structures of our life in order to keep things new, in order to keep our youthfulness. And I do think there is a quality of youthfulness which is appropriate to every decade of our life. It just looks different. We have this fixed idea of youthfulness from our teens or our 20s, but actually there's a form of youthfulness you're supposed to inhabit when you're in your 70s or your 80s or your 90s. It's this sense of imminent surprise, of imminent revelation, except the revelation and the discovery is more magnified, fiercer, more to do with your mortality and what you're going to pass on and leave behind, the shape of your absence. He goes on, and Miss Tippett says things about, quoting a line that says, to be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. And he says, yes. And she says, well, what does that mean? But here's where he says something about our ages again. It's really working with that earlier dynamic of incarnation, of becoming visible in the world. And that, yet the gift that you're going to give and keep on giving is an invisible gift that will take many different forms and that you learn more of each time you allow it to take a different form. And you move from your 20s into your 30s, and you suddenly find another larger form for it or a different shape that makes a different connection. And then you deepen it in your 40s, and you may get overwhelmed by it in your 50s. And then it returns to you again in more mature forms, settled forms in your 60s. So this is the gift that keeps giving. And it's that internal, deeper source. It's you becoming more and more real and more visible in the world. So at this moment, you and this congregation are now in conversation with the future, bringing together youthful perspective, present perspective, and mature perspective on the future. This is a good time to hold the conversation at this frontier level, not hurrying to a new beginning, but honoring and working within and from your direct experience, our direct experience, so that you and this community, this gathering, might create something new and live into a deeper, broader, and wider possible future. It's a good conversation to have, and it's the perfect time to have it. I realized that as I was writing this, that it really brings me full circle to talk about David White and his biology work, but also my plans to retire, and that they take shape on Earth Day. So it begins a new and renewed commitment to stay in conversation. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? I'll be downstairs afterwards for all of that.